Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
All right, well, you've probably heard about the fact that I'm having my latest book, The Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is available right now. Now, of course, you can buy it from Amazon, but if you want the best deal possible, what you're going to want to do is buy it from me by texting DocBook. That's DocBook. That's one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or, of course, you can go to the website, which is drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, I'm offering all kinds of bonuses with this. Make sure to check out the website, send the text, and we'll shoot you right over so you can check it out.
Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. This is Dave Denniston. And as you know, this podcast is about helping you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Here with me on the podcast today, we have a gentleman who has a couple of different gigs. He's kind of like me, multitasking and growing multiple streams of income. First of all, he has a company we're going to be talking about, Red Rock Capital, that's helping investors increase their net worth while building up communities across the country. And this is in the commercial space, this is in the storage space and mobile home parks, multifamily, all kinds of different parts of real estate. And so he's helping provide passive opportunities to many different investors. Now, on top of that, he also has a staffing and recruiting solutions healthcare provided company, which we're going to be talking about some of the opportunities for perhaps some younger physicians or people looking to pay off their debt that want to get some extra money on the side without competing with their existing hospital. That might be a great opportunity for you. And on top of all that, he is an author of an ebook, The Definitive Guide to Passive Income from Commercial Real Estate Investing. Please help me welcome Shane Connor. Welcome, Shane.
Dave, it's a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you for having me on the call. And, hello to all your listeners out there and all the wonderful physicians. Thank you for what you guys do. I highly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, we're talking pre-hand about some of my, why I do kind of what I do here a little bit. And I'd love to hear for you, since you got started in the healthcare space, what's your background in dealing with physicians?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do, you know, my full-time job, I've been with a great firm. I'll just clarify that. I don't own the staffing company. We're about a $400 million organization. So our CEO, Marty Judge, is a wonderful guy. It's kind of a family-run business. But yeah, I sit in our healthcare practice, and we work coast-to-coast across the healthcare spectrum, from the payers, providers, revenue cycle organizations, small groups, large physician groups, hospital owned, really you name it in healthcare, we're pretty much partnered, and we provide everything from full-time executive search services, from medical directors through, you know, internal medicine, residencies across the board, and then we run all the way down to, you know, nurses, CNAs, medical assistants, front office, back office, administrative professionals. So really just anything that touches the healthcare spectrum in terms of a temporary hire, a temp, long-term contractor, or a direct search, we do that. And I've been doing it for 7 years. Really enjoy it. I actually went back, got my master's in healthcare administration, just kind of fell in love with the healthcare industry, and now I have an opportunity to partner with physicians and physician leaders closely in, you know, helping their operations run smoothly and filling key positions.
Wow, that's great. And any parts of the job that you just love? You know, what's some of the parts of the gig that you think is pretty sweet about doing that?
Yeah, I love it. You know, every day is different, right? We're always coming up with new challenges, new clients coming to our doorstep. And I really do, from the physician side, you know, I like working to solve the business side of it, because many times, you know, whether it's an independently owned practice or even if it's hospital owned or a larger group, you know, most physicians, you know, they went into the business to take care of their patients, right? And everything else is kind of a byproduct. You know, all the regulations now, the new CMS, That's kind of a hassle. So whether we're providing them another provider or we're providing them medical billers and coders to help on the revenue cycle side or a front office administrator, anything that helps the physicians focus back on, you know, that face time with the patient, which is very limited and crucial these days, that's what I really enjoy doing. And then on the second part, some of the interesting side opportunities that we're able to bring to physicians, whether it's doing some strategic medical review work for our insurance clients or disability benefits for our prime VA contracts, the ability to help supplement physician income, which I can do through the staffing and recruiting side, or as we'll talk about a little bit on the real estate side.
Yeah, so we're definitely going to get into the real estate. We're going to talk about all the different opportunities physicians have that you help folks out with. And we just talked about, I guess you touched on the review work, and you talked about pre-show as well, the disability reviews that physicians are needed for. So yep. Tell us about that a little bit. Is this 1099 income? Is it W-2 income? Help us understand what kind of opportunity this is for physicians.
Yep. So mostly it's going to be W-2. So we'll put you on our books here. We provide medical malpractice that includes tail coverage to stay with you. And, you know, on the consulting review work, usually that's going to be an hourly project. And typically we're getting anywhere. I mean, we have some full-time opportunities, but most of what we see, you can give 10 to 20 hours a week on your own availability and doing a lot of post-service reviews, genetic reviews, approvals and denials for backlog cases. Some of these health plans and managed care organizations are just swamped. A lot of physicians have retired. Full-time medical directors are kind of moving out. So, you know, the utilization management function is key to how these health plans operate. You know, a lot of times they just need us to bring in a board-certified physician to help render these decisions. Now, the disability benefits, that's a little bit different model where, you know, some of our prime contractors who work with the DOD and the VA directly, you know, we'll get a caseload of zip codes, so we'll know where we have some veterans and where they're up for evaluation. Then we'll go out and contact a physician who's got an office that's ADA compliant and has some open availabilities, maybe a Tuesday or a Thursday, and they're willing to basically, you know, do one of these, what we call DBQs, disability benefit questionnaire. And that's an opportunity to do a little work beforehand, review the case. The veteran will come in. You'll do the evaluation, kind of fill out the standard checklist items, write up your little summary. We'll send it back, and then once their medical director approves it, then we'll process a payment to our contracted providers. So that's more of a per case or per evaluation model. But again, great way to kind of, you know, earn some side income, especially if you have a practice and maybe you have an open day a week where you don't see patients. You've already got the infrastructure. You know, we'll do all the backgrounding and invoicing. You just got to do the evaluation and a little bit of paperwork.
Interesting. So I'm curious, like, I would normally think of this kind of thing as being an independent contractor 1099 type income. Why W-2 and not 1099?
A lot of times it's at the request of our clients. They like the security, the insurance side of it, the liability side of it that comes from them being an employee of ours. That way they get all, you know, our organization holds, you know, a $20 million umbrella policy, large medical malpractice policy. So, you know, basically it's usually stipulated by upstream contracts that, you know, they like the work to be done on a W-2.
Okay. Interesting. Now, what about, would a resident be able to do this, or a fellow be able to do this kind of work on the side, considering that they're only making 50 or 60 grand a year and might be looking for some extra income, whether they look for locums or something like that, maybe an opportunity like one of these?
Yeah, Dave, sometimes, and again, that's why, like I mentioned earlier, why I like it, and every day is different. We never know what's going to come across our desk, and sometimes we will see opportunities where we can use residents. So I'd encourage any of them out there just to, you know, they'll have all my contact information after the show. Reach out to me, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm always kind of posting out on what our opportunities are, and if they get connected with us and get in our database, they'll have an opportunity to view every new available, you know, position that we have out or consulting opportunity. Will go out to our network, and all our physicians can see those.
Love it. Very cool. Well, thank you for sharing those opportunities with us, Shane. I think anything that we can do to help create some extra income, we know that for me, I'm into businesses and creating businesses, but that's not for everybody. For some people, getting money that they can count on right when they have it is a good thing. But let's move to the next part of our conversation of commercial real estate and real estate opportunities. So before we talk about what you're doing now, I'm curious to know, you have your normal day gig. When did you get into real estate, and what was that journey like?
Yeah, absolutely. It was about three or four years ago. You know, I was having some pretty good years, you know, from an income standpoint. You know, what we do is highly commission incentivized. So, you know, whether it's direct hire searches, you know, we're paid contingency by our clients, or on a consulting basis, you know, our compensation model kind of depends on how many contractors we have out there working. So there's really no ceiling to what you can earn in some of the years, depending on what projects you have, can be, you know, pretty lucrative. And I was kind of single and looking around and thinking, what am I going to do, you know, with some of this extra income? So start doing some research. There's some really good platforms out there where you can just learn about, you know, different alternative investments. And Bigger Pockets is a good one that I recommend. If your listeners haven't heard about it, they may probably have, just as a good landing page for all things real estate. So long story short, I ended up getting in contact with a gentleman who was doing some posting about commercial real estate syndication. I had no idea what that was, and ended up putting my first limited partner investment into a 300-unit apartment building out in Dallas, which I still receive a monthly cash distribution on. We've actually refinanced the debt after about 15 months in, when we finished our renovation and repositioning period, and we'll probably be looking to sell that asset in the next 12 or 18 months. But that kind of exposed my eyes to what goes on out there and what's possible in that world. You really just, I was kind of under the impression every building, apartment building, whatever, was always owned by Wall Street or some institution. But you'd really be surprised, Dave, to realize that many buildings that you see out there, whether it's self-storage, mobile home park, multifamily, is probably owned by a small group of private investors, a general partner or a sponsor operator leading that acquisition, and then a group of investors behind that, which would we call the syndication. And it really just blew my mind that the types of returns that you can receive.
Well, one of my biggest concerns, Shane, as I look at these kinds of opportunities, which I totally acknowledge they are out there, but when it comes with these kind of illiquid investments, you know, you can't just turn around and sell it at a drop of a hat, right?
Yep.
You know, it's you're also giving over your money to someone that you may not know well at all. And I think, how did you evaluate the opportunity to say, okay, this person isn't a fraud, this isn't a scam, I know this is a real opportunity? Because we know those kind of scams are out there. You know, they happen all the time, whether it's someone like Bernie Madoff or some sort of Ponzi scheme.
Yep.
Those kind of things do happen. So, or perhaps people just get fed to death by commissions and various things that happen with people that set up these kind of companies. So how did you evaluate that, and how would you think about that now?
Great question, and definitely a question I get a lot. And you know, number one, I advise any investor out there or any of your listeners, whether it's, you know, an opportunity that they're pursuing in real estate or anything, I mean, obviously homework and your own due diligence is definitely required. And I would do it first and foremost on, you know, the operators who's sponsoring the deal. And that's where I focus most of my time. And I'm a finance guy by background. So, you know, I get the investment deck. I don't need very long to understand that in and of itself is a good investment. I was more concerned with, you know, who are the operators, right? What is their background? What is their track record? What can I find online about them? Or does anybody I know them, and any information that I can find? So I did a fair amount of homework, and everything that I could find turned up, you know, positive. And what was really keen to me, and I think something that you should be evaluating when you're looking to do one of these private investments is, you know, what's the track record? How many deals have they done? Because what you'll find is the good guys out there, the high integrity, long-term folks are doing many, many repeat deals. And you don't do that without the power of a lot of private capital behind you. And that is return investment. And you don't get return investment unless you're highly, you have a high degree of integrity and you're doing what you say you're going to do. So, you know, there's not really, and it's a small world, and, you know, everybody, there's a lot of partnering that goes on, a lot of talking. So if somebody is doing shady things or is only in it for the quick money on one deal and then you're never going to see from them again, they'll be snuffed out pretty quick. And we don't work, we personally, our group of operators, we don't work with anybody that hasn't had at least, you know, 3 or 4 prior deals. And at this point, we have such demand for the power of capital that we bring. We just keep it with the 5 or 6 groups that we know and like, and they do repeat business, and that's good for us. So to your point, I mean, you don't, you're not really always going to know everything, but you should be doing a fair amount of your own due diligence, not only on the investment, but on the operators. And then at some point, you just have to be afraid to go forward.
Let me just interrupt you on that for a second. I mean, obviously, you do have to take a leap of faith, but I want to know, what kind of due diligence things can you do? You know, where would you go, knowing what you know, to look someone up? I mean, obviously, you can Google someone. That's pretty obvious. But yep. Outside of Googling someone, what are some resources or places people could go to make sure someone's not a criminal or that they're legit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously, LinkedIn. If any of your, you know, physicians or listeners are active on there, it's a great way where you can use that mutual connection tool or second degree connection tool. So you can reach out to people that may know these people and say, hey, do you know anything about this guy? Do you know anything about what they do in their work? Or that's where you can find kind of places where they've worked before. You can reach out and see if anybody knows, hey, is their track record correct? You can ask for references from prior investors. Right? Hey, what's your experience with these guys? How many deals have you done? Is everything kind of kosher like you think it is? So, you know, I personally haven't used any kind of like private investigative type of tools or like background checks. I know that those things are out there, and I think it's just that's up to each person what level of kind of research they would want to do. For me, I think a good solid due diligence effort, asking around a few people, and as long as things are coming back positively, and I know that these are repeat operators that have been doing it for some time, then, you know, that they're going to check out enough, at least from my aspect.
Well, here's what I would ask, and I'm curious to get your feedback on this, is I would want to know from someone like yourself, is what is the worst deal that you've done? And then talk to investors that invested in that one. That would tell me more about the person than someone that was extremely happy, you know, with an amazing return, which is what you're likely to get most from people. So that's the question I would ask is because more than likely, most of us, in order to learn, you make mistakes, right? Mm-hmm. And so what were those mistakes? And I think that's what that might help to uncover. And if someone doesn't want to tell you their worst deal or give you references, to me, that's a red flag. So that's one thing I would think about. Any other things you could think about that someone might want to ask?
No, and I think if you look at, you know, at the operators that are out there and you know, that they've been around for a while, and certainly markets have been through downturns and maybe not every decade or return has hit what they've, you know, wanted to. I know that that's why, at least on the deals that we're focused on, they're very, very conservatively underwritten, and they are cash-producing assets on day one. And I think that's pretty important because, you know, when we take over a property, you can pay the preferred return off of the cash flow alone, right? So you're getting the preferred, the large amount is in the business plan that we're going to execute to force that appreciation. But of course, historically speaking, you know, everyone has been, you know, was through 2008, 2009, where investments were not performing very well. But the thing that I see everyone focusing on now probably as a good result out of that is very, very conservative underwriting. So even in a downturn, the building still is producing enough cash flow to spit off the preferred return. But to your point, yeah, I think, you know, snuffle, you know, don't always look for the roses. Look for maybe how they bounce back in the past from things that maybe didn't go according to plan.
Well, and some of the other stuff I would think of as well, which comes up with a lot of my land information, is look to see if they're talking about a building, verify who owns it and what the history has been on the building. You know, you should be able to get those kind of records from the county. So that would be the other kind of due diligence that I would encourage any of us to do, to check that out and see what it has been bought and sold for and what entities have been involved, and digging into the little bit of the title research, I think, would be a great idea.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's take a pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like some members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you've never had all this financial training during medical school, and you're just struggling with enough time to do it all. Well, my friend, over 2 years ago, I started on this journey of writing my next book. And it was a book for residents and fellows, and I reached out to a few potential authors, and Amanda Liu joined me in this journey. Finally, it is available, The Physician's Guide, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is packed with pretty much anything and everything you want to know as a young physician. Millionaire mindset, debt payoff, buying your first home, and contract negotiation. Now, of course, you can pick it up at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any major vendor. However, if you want the best deal possible, you are going to want to get it from me by texting DocBook, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, why am I suggesting to do this? Well, it's because I am offering the sun, the moon, and the stars when you buy it directly from me. Because not only will you get a physical copy of the book, for only about $25, $24.95, you are going to get the following as a bonus. Of course, the physical copy of the book, an electronic copy of the book, an audio copy of my other book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, all of the episodes of The Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, over 4 seasons worth of material, and you're going to get an electronic copy of the newest edition of the Tax Reduction Prescriptions. And on top of that, you're going to get a whole new write-up on my journey in land investing. You're going to get exclusive content on that as I am going forward. My friends, this is over $100 retail of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to pick up this book and all the bonuses and get all that financial training that you've desired? You're going to get it from me by texting DocBook. Again, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or going to www.drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. To snag your copy now, text DocBook to 44222. Or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. And now, back to the show.
Outside of all of that, let's talk about you mentioned the term operator, and on your website, which is redrockcapitalgroup.com, I'm clicking around on investments, and you have the term operator, you have the term sponsor. Many of us may not know what the heck that means. So you mentioned operator a few times as we were talking. What is an operator and what is a sponsor?
Yep, great question. So, you know, in this space, and a lot of times they can be the same. So the operator will also be the sponsor. The operator basically, they're the ones, you know, they're doing this full time. They're out there in the marketplace. Our folks especially are constantly underwriting potential investments. For every investment we bring, you know, to the marketplace and they bring under contract, there's probably been, you know, 10, 15, or 20 that they underwrote and passed on. But basically the operator is the one that's going to find the property, acquire the property, do the due diligence, manage the property after it's acquired, execute the business plan, run it day to day. Now, the sponsor is the one who's going to handle the private placement, the operating agreements, the legal, the accounting with the K-1 statements, the CPAs, all the back office administration in terms of investor paperwork. Now, like you said, sometimes those two can be the same. An operator may have the back office infrastructure to do that. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, and some of our operators that operate at a little bit of an more institutional level, they're not really in the business of K-1s and PPMs, and you know, they want somebody to just write them a $5 million check. So in that term, you may have a sponsor involved who's going to help aggregate the funds, handle the private placement memorandum, handle the K-1 and the accounting statement for all the investors, aggregate those funds, and then invest in one single swoop to that institutional operator. So many times we'll find they're the same, but in simple terms, operators actually are operating that property. Sponsors are sponsoring the investment, that private investment. Sometimes they can be separate, sometimes they can be together.
So one of the, thank you for clarifying that. That was good education for us to be aware of. So essentially the operator manages the property. They might have some other functions, but they're managing the property. The sponsor is raising money and then managing the accounting, if you will.
Accounting, the legal framework, executing it, all that stuff.
Got it. And so sometimes that company can be one and the same. Sometimes they're separate. Like right now you have a deal for self-storage where there's a separate sponsor and an operator. So, you know, one of the other things that I think can be a little daunting when you look at these kind of deals is when you have like a single family home, right? And you as an investor go and buy it, or me as a investor, I go and buy a piece of land. I know who owns it. You know, I don't have to worry about paying other people for stuff. Whereas now, in order for me to buy a storage center, you know, it might cost, I don't know, $2 million. And so to come up with $2 million is a lot more difficult. And so therefore, this is why you get the group of people together to each put in 25 or 50 or 100 grand or whatever they put into the deal. So that's my understanding for the reasoning of why this kind of happens. And that way you can invest in 5 or 6 or 7 deals, you know, with a few $100,000 rather than potentially, if you bought in cash, a residential property by one of them. But when you have more people involved, obviously there's more overhead. There's more costs to running this. So help us understand, like with the storage center that you have here that's, I guess, in Key West, like there's Thompson Investing, who's the sponsor, and there's Reliant, who's the operator. So how are each of these companies making money?
Right. So, in that instance, Reliant is our operating partner. To their conversation we just had, they're in the self-storage business, top 25 operator. That's all they do day in and day out is run self-storage properties, look to acquire them, renovate them, execute, drive efficiencies. They're not in the business of, you know, handling a private placement memorandum or a K-1 statement for a $50,000 investor, right? They do take private investment, but typically it's an institutional level, you know, $5 million and up, right? So in this instance, they are the ones that have the broker relationships. The property was brought to them through their deep broker relation off market. They are the ones that are going to acquire the building. They will be owning it, running our business plan over the next 5 years, and then they will be disposing of that asset. They need private capital to do that, and want to bring in private capital to do that. Thompson Investing, which is part of the group that I'm involved in, we will be that sponsor for that particular investment because, again, we are going to handle the $50,000, the $100,000 investor or investees, aggregate those funds, and we will be investing collectively passive as a $5 million investment into the Reliant self-storage operation. So that's a great kind of example of what we just talked about. You have your operator, they're the experts, they have the property, they're acquiring it. They're not in the business of raising the private investing or dealing with K-1s or investor questions. That's where we come in to basically handle all of the PPMs, K-1 statements, investor relations, distributions, all that kind of stuff. And we will collectively invest with Reliant and handle those quarterly distributions throughout that five-year project.
So Reliant is putting money into this as well.
Yes.
In terms of their own capital. And then, so in this particular case, which I'm sure isn't always the case, but in this particular case, they are actually owning a piece of it, which I think is always kind of a good thing, right? You know,
yeah.
I think
all of our operators, what we call skin in the game, and you look for that to have interest aligned. Typically, what you're going to find on a lot of these deals is it's usually around 33% of the purchase price is what is raised in private funds to handle all the acquisition costs, down payment, capital expenditures, a lot of the business plan. But the cash flow starts in day one, and that's why investors typically you'll see their monthly or their first quarter the distributions will start. So it's not like the LPs are aggregating together, investing, and they're waiting for that five-year period, and then it's disposed of, and then they get their payout, right? We're all about putting investor capital back in your pockets as soon as possible, which is why we look for those what we call liquidity events. So a lot of the debt, fixed debt that we'll put on these is interest only, say 24 months interest only, which is super important because a lot of the times our business plan phase is 24 months, right? So at the end of that 2 years, whether it's multifamily, we've renovated the units, whether it's self-storage, we maybe brought in AC control, brought in new property management, new marketing efforts. In this particular deal in Key West, we're actually expanding capacity by 50%, which is basically going to, as you can imagine, drive revenue up pretty significantly. So when you go back, just like a single-family residence, you know, physician may own their primary home, they understand you refinance the debt after you have increased equity. Same thing, we refinance that debt, we're going to spit back as much principal, oftentimes 40 or 50% of your principal is going to come back to the investor at that time. So we're all about putting the investor capital back in your pocket as soon as possible. And at that point, like what I like to do is then if another deal comes along, well, now I've got, say, 50% with monthly distributions or quarterly distributions. Now I only need a little bit of new capital to get in this new deal. And that's what I call the snowball effect, right? So I'll start earning money off my one, get some of that principal back, roll it into the next one, and so on and so forth. But you're free to, you know, you're not forced to roll into anything.
Right. So again, I want to go back to my question of how is the sponsor and the operator making money from this particular deal? You know, how does that work?
Yeah, well, I mean, the operator, like any building, I mean, they're the ones that are owning it, and most of their, you know, profits are going to come just like the investors. The significant bump is going to come on that disposition. So typically you're going to see a 70-30 or 80-20 type split, meaning there's a preferred return paid to the LP investors and then a split on those equity profits. So 80-20 would be 80% to the limited partners and 20% to the operator. Meaning, you know, that's still their deal. They put it together. They found it. They, you know, basically brought it to light. You have an offering as a limited partner to participate and earn that preferred distribution and then also get a larger piece of those profits collectively.
Got it.
And on the sponsor, they are basically part of the general partnership. And there's some, you know, equity involved in the deal for putting together the investment, raising the capital, handling the PPMs, all that kind of stuff. And you'll see typically an asset management fee. Industry standard, you'll probably see around between operating, acquisition costs, and all the likes around 3%. We were actually under that on the Key West deal.
About 3%.
Right. But what's important to note, and people should always be asking these questions when they're out there looking at decks, when we show, you know, returns, when our operators are, in case in the sponsors, if it's not us, when they're putting the decks together, the preferred return and equity splits are always shown net fees, right? So it's not like we're paying a preferred return schedule, but it's actually going to be less your fees. You know, the fees are baked into their underwriting assumptions and their underwriting calculations. So if we're going to pay 9% pref and 80-20, that's going to be all net fees. And what you also see is listed is the IRR and then the equity multiple. So if we're shooting for a 2.1 equity multiple, that's net any fees in the investment.
Gotcha. I'm following. I think it's a lot of terminology that many of us may not be familiar with, but I think I would encourage everyone just re-listen back to this part of the conversation, and you'll probably start understanding it. Basically, what we're talking about here is the return
Absolutely.
That you get kind of after fees. So
Correct. So if you're looking at a quick deck, you'll usually see on the first or second page, they put those investment highlights where you're going to see basically the most important nuts and bolts of the purchase price, what we're looking to sell it at, potentially the net operating income, and then what our IRR shooting for is and what our equity multiple shooting is, meaning if you put in $50,000 and we're shooting for that 2.1 multiple, net fees, net everything upon sale, you'll be totally returned $110,000 on your $50,000 investment. And then we're seeing that across the board, usually between 2 to 2.3. I've even seen 2.4 on a five-year project. So you really are hard-pressed to find many investments that are going to return that type of capital.
So tell me about storage centers, which is something mm-hmm. that you have focused on. Why storage centers? What led you to that? You know, how did you, because you talked about multifamily was your start. So how did you get into the storage centers and what attracted you to that versus, let's say, I'm in a commercial building here as we stand, an office building that's a few stories high, probably worth a couple $1 million. Why storage? What got you going in that particular field?
Yep. Well, good question. I mean, it was one of those things where, again, until I was kind of brought an opportunity and exposed to it, never had really thought about it. But the more I, read about it and investigated it and participated in the deal, it really, again, opened my eyes. You know, Dave, the reality is people buy a lot of junk and, people acquire a lot of things. And if you notice, you don't have to drive very far in any major metropolitan area, you'll see storage units popping up all over the place. And they're a pretty good model once you have them, up and running. The money's coming in. There's not a lot of overhead in terms of operating those units, right? I mean, they just basically sit there full of stuff. Once in a while, somebody comes and they check on their stuff and they go about their day. So it's a very highly cash flow intensive investment. And what you want to be very keen at looking at, though, in the self-storage space is looking at, excess supply, how many competitor units are in, 2, 5, 8 mile radiuses, and are they temperature controlled? And also, what is their, marketing and sales team effort? Because, they're only as good as long as people are leasing them up. So those are one of the two key attributes that we look for, and the one was very interesting about Key West was the zoning, local zoning actually did not allow for any new storage unit facilities to be purchased or to be constructed, However, the property that we were acquiring already had room and zoning approved for 50% excess capacity. So nobody else was allowed to build, yet this property was already approved to build 50% more. So that's really securing your investment from a standpoint of no other supply is really able to come in around you. And that's one of the key indicators you're looking for when you're evaluating self-storage. But it's very cash flow positive, low overhead maintenance type of investment.
Interesting. Well, and I guess to a degree, if someone doesn't pay, when do they end up defaulting? Is it a month, 2 months, 3 months? Because, there's all those reality TV show or two that shows bidding and on storage stuff that people are looking
yeah.
for. So we've seen that on TV.
I haven't been through that myself, and I don't want to speak out of context without knowing the facts. I believe it's somewhat of a short window within, let's say 2 or 3 months. And as you mentioned on those shows, I mean, I've had a friend that lost a snowboard. They actually moved. They forgot that they had it and they weren't getting the bills. And next thing they know, all their stuff was sold. So, it is very, I want to say easy. You still have to go through that process of liquidating those, items. But, if somebody's not paying, you have every right to liquidate their assets and to lease somebody else in there.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting. So that's the good news, is if someone isn't paying, you have an opportunity to sell their junk.
It's not as like, you know, if you have to evict somebody, you know, there's personal situations, there's, you know, heartstrings can get in there. I mean, it is all business at the end of the day. But if somebody's not paying for their unit, it's a little easier to say, okay, we have to sell your dresser and your spare mattress, right? It's not like you have to literally go to court to get, you know, maybe a family in there that is not paying anymore. So it's a little bit of a quicker and cleaner process.
Is there ever any issue with theft? You know, because I have to imagine that if people are just keeping their stuff in there, you know, but there might be something valuable that having to deal with thieves breaking into these units could be a problem from time to time.
Yeah, so that's why, I mean, you're going to want to look for operators that have, you know, secured facilities. You're going to want to look for maybe security on site. What type of, are they locked? Is there a fence with barbed wire? And then what type of locks, you know, are they putting on the unit? I mean, of course, you know, there's theft everywhere. Nobody's totally immune to theft. But from what I've experienced so far, is it does not seem to be a big issue with the operators that we partner with.
Interesting. Well, I guess it depends on where it's at, right? I mean, location
exactly.
Would be a big deal.
Location, and, you know, that's what you're also going to want to look for in those decks. Very heavily saturated areas of cities we tend to kind of stay away from, because, you know, you've got the CubeSmarts and the U-Hauls of the world, and that's really who we are looking to sell to after our five-year business plan, right? We're looking, again, just like a multifamily, we're looking to drive some type of value into this property that then we want to sell it to those large, basically, chains that just have to gobble up by acquisition. Same thing, same concept on the multifamily. At the end of that period, we've renovated and repositioned. You know, we just want to sell it to a big REIT who's just looking for cash flow positive, no maintenance. So you want to kind of stay away from areas where those folks are already heavily saturated, because then they're not going to be looking to acquire. They're already in that marketplace. They want to get into the marketplace where you're in.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very cool. So I'd love to know from you and your experience now in doing several deals, what do you think is the biggest lesson in real estate that you can pass on to us?
Yep. So I've been asked this question before, and I don't know if it's always the answer that folks are expecting or looking for, but for me, I would say it's being educated and being fast. And what I say is, you should be spending tons of time doing your homework, learning, talking to folks when you're not ready to invest, so that when you are ready to invest, you don't miss out on the deal. Because you'd be surprised in how fast some of these investments fill up. Like, I'm talking $4 to $5 million in 4 days, and that's coming from $50,000 increments, mostly on an average. And that's just because either it's repeat investors who have already gotten their taste and like what they see, or folks who have been primed, who have been talked to, who have been educated, who have done their diligence, and then they're just waiting for that deck, waiting for that memorandum to hit that next new opportunity. So all they have to do is look at the deal, the specs. Okay, I already know the operator, I already knew you, go. So I've found that people who are not prepared to move will miss out, because these, you know, whether it's these deals or anything in real estate, I mean, look at the residential marketplace right now. I just bought a townhouse with my wife. We were one of 10 offers on list day. So, you know, you have to be ready to move pretty quickly in anything out there, but specifically in the real estate investing space, you can't be kind of slow to the game. And when you're going to be slow is when you're just in the evaluation, kind of let me investigate what this is all about phase. Take your time then. Do your homework. Have conversations. Get on calls. Take people a coffee. But then be ready to go. Because when that opportunity comes, you're going to want to be able to say, I'm in. Mark me down. Because then you're on the list.
Great suggestion. I love it. And Shane, any other closing thoughts for us as we wrap up the podcast today?
No, I'd just say that, you know, for like, we work with a lot of physicians on our investments. We try to kind of position ourselves as really focused on that you know, what we call the busy professional. Just like I'm in, you know, I work 50 plus hours a week, 55 hours a week in the sales and recruiting side. You know, I don't have time to go acquire properties or do the due diligence. And, you know, I don't want to be in the landlord business. That's why I choose to partner with, you know, operators, but also I get to come in as a limited partner, right? So I still have all the owner. I still own. I get a K-1 statement. I get appreciation. I get tax benefits. This is a great investment for the busy physician who, you know, is growing or is at a point where they have some excess cash and also want to start to hedge, you know, their career in terms of, you know, what do you want to do long term, especially if you're in a smaller or independent practice. You know, the regulations are not going to stop, and I think everybody knows that. So you want to start to just, doesn't have to be an exit strategy, but has to be a diversification of your income stream that you have more freedom. This is the freedom formula, and more choices as you go. So I would encourage you just to start to think about some other stuff, whether it's talking to somebody like me or anything else out there. Just you know, start to think about some different things.
All right, perfect. And where can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've got a little landing page for your listeners out there. If they just go to redrockcapitalgroup.com/freedomformula, you'll see a little kind of welcome page there with they can click a link, grab a copy of that. It's a very simple, less than 10-page ebook where it's just going to describe syndication, how it works, and what the benefits are. Or then you'll find a link to my calendar where they can schedule a time to hop on the call with me. We can dive deeper on all this, answering questions they have, explore kind of their financial goals and what their background is, and, you know, if they might be a fit for some of our opportunities.
All right, my friends. Well, there you go. Another episode today of the Freedom Formula 4 Physicians Podcast. Make sure to check out Shane's website, ask lots of questions, and feel free to hop on the phone with him. And definitely go ahead.
This has been, I just want to say it's been a pleasure. And again, I just want to thank the physicians for all the amazing work that they do for the patients out there.
There you go. Well, thank you, Shane, for being with us. And that, my friends, wraps up another episode today. Make sure to check out all of the episodes that we've had on real estate, everything from land to multifamily to all kinds of stuff on DrFreedomPodcast.com. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.
All right, my friends. Well, that was the show for today. I hope you loved it. And I just want to give you one more reminder. My newest book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life, is available right now. $25. You get the sun, the moon, the stars, all kinds of bonuses, $100 worth of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to go and pick this book up? If so, you're going to want to get it from me and get all those bonuses by texting DocBook, that's DocBook, to 44222, or going to the website drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Again, snag your copy now by texting DocBook, that's all one word, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook.